Hello, this is Byron Richards, and you are tuned in to my weekly wellness update podcast, bringing you, as always, the health news that you can use. Well, just to keep all of you out there motivated to stay on an exercise program, a meta-analysis from 111 recent studies on exercise and brain function came to the conclusion that both aerobics and strength training are of great value to brain health at every age. This applies to children, young adults, older Americans, everyone. Doesn't matter what your age is, whenever you get in a consistent exercise, active lifestyle plan, it helps boost the function of your brain and helps to maintain cognitive function, especially in older age. So this is very good, compelling science. It is true science, and it is important. I mean, it is very clear. I've spoken about it many times, but exercise stimulates the gene signals in your body that turn on the production of brain-derived neurotrophic factor, BDNF. BDNF is the fountain of youth for your nervous system and for rejuvenating your brain. And so when your activation and reinforcement of BDNF is greater than the stressors and the demands that cause wear and tear and inflammation to your nervous system, then your brain lasts longer. It thinks clearer. It feels better. So, of course, there's a great many nutrients that I've talked about. DHA, pantothene, acetyl-L-carnitine, zinc, blueberries, curcumin, and others that help to boost BDNF. And there are probably many others that do as well. They just haven't been tested. And you can rest assured that in the diet, your fresh fruits and vegetables are the main sources, along with your fish oils, that are going to boost BDNF for you. Although they're not the only ingredients in your diet. But my point is, between exercise and the taking of dietary supplements and eating a diet that is rich in these molecules that help to make BDNF, you have your best chance for preserving the human abilities that you possess, including your cognitive abilities, and not only maximizing them. So we're not just talking about diseases here. We're talking about in children, young adults, and so on. We're talking about maximizing human potential. More ability. Exercise is required to activate the genes that help to produce that. That's really good news for everyone, and I certainly hope you take advantage of it next time you think you're just too tired to get off that chair. All right, Medicare Part D addicts seniors to big pharma drugs. This is not surprising, but we now have a study of the statistics on the impact of Medicare Part D. And they have certainly, you know, Medicare Part D, for those of you who don't understand it, is an unfunded drug liability that was created by President Bush to help his friends in the pharmaceutical industry make money, lock in sales at taxpayer expense. It was very popular to some, even to the majority of Democrats, because it is essentially giving something for nothing on the surface, but of course everyone else pays for it. So at any rate, the statistics now show that seniors are quite happy to pop pills ad nauseum while the rest of America foots the bill. Now, I am not opposed to a safety net for those truly in need. However, the lion's share of these drugs, which cost tens of billions of dollars per year, don't fix anything and are being given in response to self-inflicted health problems. So I think there ought to be some kind of a responsibility component here. And I don't think the taxpayers, I mean, individually, there's a responsibility for people to take it upon themselves to become healthier and not need drugs because they are healthy. At the same time, I don't see why, beyond any maybe short use of drugs to help get someone back on track, which I don't think they do anyway, but maybe you could argue that they... you don't want a diabetic's blood sugar skyrocketing to the point of a coma, which doesn't usually happen in type 2 diabetes. But my point is, temporary use of medication is what medication should be for, not long-term use. And long-term use, then we're not getting any true resolution of the health problem. And the drug companies are always concocting statistics that show that people who take these drugs cause less healthcare expense than those who don't take them. But you have to understand that these studies are never compared to people who actually make an effort to be healthy and what kind of cost savings there are there. So my point is that as long as there's a government mandate to give people drugs at virtually no charge, then people will take advantage of this and do it rather than become healthier. And that's just the way the world works. And that's why we have out-of-control healthcare costs, or one of the main reasons is this out-of-control spending on drugs. And this is just proof that that is actually what happens as a result of these kinds of governmental policies. All right. Increasing vitamin D levels will likely extend lifespan. So this is an epidemiological study that predicts that raising the bottom of the normal score for vitamin D to the number 44. Right now, when you go to your American doctor, you usually get a score in the range of, the bottom is 30. And a lot of data is coming out indicating that you should be somewhere between 50 and 80. But this data is saying that if we just got everybody up to 44 as a bottom number of what's acceptable, it would reduce all-cause mortality around the world. So they're just not even talking about those in the United States. They're talking about everybody by 17% for European females or females of European descent. 7.6% for African American or African females. And in general, the specific diseases that are associated with a lack of vitamin D that end up causing mortality, which would be some of the cancers specifically, respiratory infections and so on, would drop by 20%. 20% reduction in all-cause mortality from the specific vitamin D diseases, and even those that aren't considered specific diseases would have vitamin D adequacy, obviously has an impact on them because it's still part of the picture. And now vitamin D is, of course, available in the sun. It's from the sun exposure certain times of the year, and it is one of the most inexpensive dietary supplements on planet Earth, making you wonder why the public health people who always say they're so interested in helping people with their health refuse to make any kind of significant effort to correct vitamin D deficiency in America, let alone try to promote vitamin D adequacy as a health paradigm. Could it be that nobody would get sick in the winter? Could that be the agenda? My goodness, we take vitamin D, boost it up a little in the winter, and we don't need flu vaccines. It couldn't be an agenda like that, could it? No, I don't think so. High-dose vitamin D reduces chronic pain. What? What the heck's going on here? You mean vitamin D is now going to be used to treat pain? Well, this is actually a clinical trial with breast cancer patients. It actually has widespread implications for anybody with chronic pain, but this was done in the breast cancer setting. And this is because, one of the main treatments of follow-up for women with breast cancer is to give them tamoxifen, which is a drug that wreaks havoc with estrogen receptors, hopefully towards the goal of preventing recurrence of breast cancer. That's kind of debatable, of course, because it also causes insulin resistance, which promotes breast cancer. But let's not go into that argument here for the moment. Let's just point out that when a woman goes on this, she gets a lot of pain in her bones because women's bones are highly sensitive to estrogen status. And not only in the bones, but in the joints, and that this pain can be so serious that she will not comply to the you know, the medical decree to take this medication for years. All right, so now, of course, the doctors have been in recent years getting more interested in testing for vitamin D, and a lot of times women, of course, with breast cancer were vitamin D deficient in the first place, so some of these doctors, quite interestingly and intelligently on their part, started giving 50,000 units of vitamin D a week along with the tamoxifen treatments, and they started to notice that the women who got the vitamin D didn't have the pains that all the other women had who were not taking the vitamin D. So they did, based on that clinical observation, they then put that clinical observation to a rigorous scientific study so that it could be ascertained if they were just seeing things or if, in fact, vitamin D actually was, in fact, having some impact. And what they found out was, indeed, vitamin D was responsible for putting a lid on the chronic pain. Well, isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? Well, why would vitamin D put a lid on chronic pain? Well, vitamin D is the key nutrient that regulates the immune system's ability to tolerate inflammation. So if you have vitamin D adequacy, your immune system can regulate its relationship to how hot the immune system gets and thus how much pain there is. Well, that has implications for every autoimmune disease, such as rheumatoid arthritis, fibromyalgia, any kind of pain, really, even injury pain, because the pain system is being tested, would be important here. And even in my article, I reported on concussions. If somebody got a concussion and they were inadequate in vitamin D, they would be much more likely to get an overheated thalamus gland that would then create changes that could linger on indefinitely. So this has very, very widespread application to anybody who has pain, whether it's as a result or an occurrence with a chronic health problem, or from an injury, or from a new injury, or accident. This is very, very interesting data, and it has got very widespread application value. That doesn't mean that on some, you know, acute pain issues, somebody would need other nutrients that would help manage pain or even medications for a short-term period that would help manage pain. But it does mean that if you're vitamin D optimized, you are less likely to have an out-of-control anaphylactic-like pain reaction to whatever the problem happens to be. And thus, your body will be able to regain its homeostasis and its sense of natural balance in relation to healing the problem much more rapidly, which would, of course, help you not get stuck with a chronic problem. And again, this is from simple intake of vitamin D. So not only will vitamin D adequacy help you live longer anyway and guard you against many of the diseases of vitamin D deficiency that can cost you your life, but it can also help you to manage pain. Good news for vitamin D. Wow. All right. I did a feature article this past week in my ongoing campaign now to raise awareness on the issue of the FDA's, this one's called the FDA's scheme to reclassify nutrients as drugs. Of course, you all will recall last week I talked about the Senator Durbin and the FDA viciously attacking dietary supplements. This article is going into more depth on one aspect of this to help individuals understand what is going on here and why would the FDA want to even reclassify nutrients as drugs? I mean, gee, is there really a need for that? Well, there certainly isn't a safety need for that, which is what they're arguing. But there certainly is a need for that if the pharmaceutical companies are going to survive over the next 10, 15, 20 years, because this is a power play by the FDA to take things that are helpful to the consumers over-the-counter as dietary supplements and repackages them as drugs, drastically boosting up their prices and lowering their availability to wide consumer application. For example, the GlaxoSmithKline prescription drug version of DHA sells for $189 a month, whereas the equivalent therapeutic amount of molecularly distilled DHA sells for $35 a month. That's right now. You can only imagine what will happen if the FDA can actually get DHA off the market. But you say to yourself, well, how on earth could the FDA do that? I mean, how could the FDA take a fish oil supplement, which has been around for a long, 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 long time, and take it off the market? Now, the 1994 Deshaies Law says that anything that was on the market at the time that law went into effect is grandfathered in. So fish oils have obviously been on the market since back then. No problem, right? Wrong. Why? Because dietary supplement manufacturers have come up with techniques that essentially molecularly distill the fish oil of all contaminations, such as PCBs, heavy metals, and mercury, thereby providing consumers with incredibly safe, toxin-free products. But at the same time, they are able to naturally concentrate the amount of DHA, which is clearly the important fraction of the fish oil, while reducing the amount of other oils, including EPA, which is not as important for the effectiveness of that supplement, and actually may either promote excessive bleeding or may compete with EPA, or excuse me, the EPA may compete with DHA for entry into the brain, and really what you want is maximizing intake of DHA. Well, that sounds like a major advancement in the dietary supplement industry to produce a better product for consumers that is safer and more effective, and that is true, and that, my friends, is the whole point of this. That's what the FDA wants to turn into a drug. Now, how are they going to do this? Well, they're going to say, as Daniel Fabricant, their point man at the FDA on this new dietary ingredient regulation, is telling the dietary supplement industry, they want to say that this better quality DHA product is now a new molecular entity. Because it isn't exactly the way it was in the original food source in terms of the ratio of EPA to DHA. So therefore, it will be branded a new dietary ingredient and will have to go through expensive safety testing, which it already has, but it will have to go through this whole rigmarole procedure, which costs anywhere from the initial petition to an FDA on any single ingredient will be a minimum of $20,000 to $25,000. And depending on the testing, that could easily go up to close to $1 million per NDI application required here on the cost of a raw material supplier. But then, according to this harebrained idea of regulation, anybody who wants to sell the product has to get a new NDI application. So you got the raw material supplier who has to have an NDI approval. Then you have every single maker of a supplement product who wants to use that very same NDI to have to go through the same exact process again, which makes no sense at all, so as to get their own approval to sell their own product with the already approved product in it. I tell you, these people at the FDA are psychotic. And that's just my best words I have for them because I don't want to use four-letter words. At any rate, that you might say, well, why doesn't the dietary supplement industry go ahead and get their NDI application for DHA going? In this new regulation, they have clearly specified that no NDI for any ingredient will be allowed if there's already an investigational new drug application or an existing drug that contains any form of that nutrient, any form of it. So any approved FDA drug that contains the nutrient DHA, which is certainly the case with this GlaxoSmithKline product, would then prevent that nutrient from getting approval. This would then have the net effect of making all DHA products on the market illegal to sell. And that is the plan. That is the plan. Why do they want DHA? Because it's better than diabetes drugs with no side effects. It's the most powerful heart compound on earth. It helps children with their brain function majorly. And DHA is the most lacking nutrient in the American diet. That's why they want to do this. And it's not just limited to DHA. They planned to provide this with all kinds of nutrients. Now, in this article, I give a couple other examples. One of them is curcumin. And let me just walk through how curcumin is going to work for you. Curcumin is a spice, the turmeric spice. That's where it comes from. And so that, of course, has been in widespread human consumption for thousands of years in Middle Eastern and Eastern cultures. So, and obviously curcumin extracts have been in dietary supplements prior to 1994. But curcumin has a little bit of a problem, meaning that it isn't very absorbable. So dietary supplement companies have concentrated its compounds in high-grade dietary supplement extracts. And some companies, well, one in particular, and I'll use the example of Sabinsa, who is a producer of a lot of herbal, high-grade herbal extracts from Eastern cultures, Middle Eastern cultures. Sabinsa, in this case, figured out a way to purify the extract so that it could get into the body better. And they figured out that by combining it with another natural pepper extract of piperine, it could increase the bioavailability of curcumin in the blood 2,000%. Well, you would think, wow, that would be really good news. And it is. It's a fantastic product. In fact, it's so fantastic that researchers at the MD Anderson Cancer Center, who are the who's who of cancer biotech and cancer traditional chemo drug research. I mean, these are the mainstream of mainstream elite leaders in the cancer industry. I mean, my goodness, Andrew von Eschenbach, the last commissioner at the FDA, used to run the MD Anderson Cancer Center before he became the FDA commissioner. And of course, Andrew's goals were simply to use the FDA to approve biotech drugs regardless of their safety profiles. So that his friends in the biotech cancer industry could make a lot of money, which he was actually pretty good at doing, not as successful as he might have liked. The FDA was just too dysfunctional, even for him, to get his agenda accomplished. There were a few safety scientists hiding under a table down the hall that kept getting in his way. But nevertheless, he was pretty effective. He didn't do a squat for food safety because, as soon as a food safety catastrophe would hit him in the face, he, of course, would have to go running for cover. Now he was being distracted. Heaven forbid the FDA actually do what it's supposed to be doing. But nevertheless, that's Andrew von Eschenbach. Anyway, I digress. So we go back here to the issue of curcumin, and we see that the MD Anderson Cancer Center is absolutely Google-eyed over curcumin and its ability to change epigenetics, which is the buzzword of all science for the next 50 years. Changing the way genes are assembled in the human body, and then what's going to happen? This is power, because epigenetic changes which progressively accumulate and manifest during the course of a person's lifetime as they age are what cause the manifestations of cancer and heart disease and obesity and Alzheimer's and everything else under the sun. And so here we've got this nutrient that can powerfully change epigenetics. Of course, they're studying it in the cancer setting, although they're well aware of all these other things it does as well, as they clearly state, as I state in this article. But my point is that they know that here is a natural substance that can tell the difference between a healthy cell and a cancer cell. So it can take a healthy, stressed cell that's having problems coping with adverse epigenetic changes but still trying to survive, and it can modulate the epigenetic signals to reverse that cell's fate back to a healthy direction by helping it do what it wants to do. On the other hand, the exact same curcumin nutrient entering into and absorbed by a cancer cell somehow has the intelligence to look around and go, uh-oh, this is a cancer cell. Let's help kill the dang thing, which is exactly what it does. In fact, it's so good at doing that it can help cancer drugs that are now not having any success killing cells kill them. In other words, when you have a cancer cell and you're dumping chemotherapy all over the top of it, believe it or not, a lot of that chemotherapy actually goes into, those chemo drugs go into the cancer cells, but the cancer cells have hijacked the survival systems of the human body, and they're pumping the chemo drugs back out of the cancer cell as fast as the drugs are going in. Thus, the cancer is resistant. You give them curcumin at the same time you give them chemo drugs, and the curcumin goes into the cell along with the chemotherapy, and the curcumin says, whoa, you can't pump this back out again. We're trying to kill you now. And so now all of a sudden the chemo drugs work when they wouldn't work before. Well, you would think, knowing this, that public health officials would be telling everybody on earth who has cancer to take curcumin with their treatments. But they're not going to do that until curcumin is a drug. Because, heavens, we can't have profits going into the dietary supplement arena or making consumers think that nutrition can actually heal them. And it's not just curcumin, it's resveratrol, it's tocotrienols, it's green tea, it's quercetin. All of these nutrients do this. No drugs do this. Nutrients do it. Why? Because nutrients were part of human evolution. So the survival systems of the very complicated genes, nutrition can tell the difference between health and disease. This is what the new science is showing. See, these guys in the science field, they thought that the science was going to be all about we identify a gene problem, we develop a drug to change the gene, and then we cure every disease on earth. Well, they can't do that. They can't even come close to doing that. That's a pie-in-the-sky pipe dream. It's nutrition that does that. They don't have any clue how to make drugs that do what nutrients do. No clue whatsoever. So guess what? They want the nutrients. They want the nutrients. So in the case of curcumin, Sabinsa has this extremely high-quality extract, but it doesn't look like curcumin in spice anymore. It is, but it's better. So now it's going to be having to have a NDI filed. But wait, Sabinsa, who has been working with the MD Anderson Cancer Center and others, already has several new drug applications already filed for this exact compound. Thus, there is no way this will be granted an NDI for the dietary supplement industry because it already has a drug application. You see how this works? You're getting my point. So now, this particular curcumin extract and all high-grade curcumin extracts on the market will be deemed ineligible for NDI status because of Sabinsa's already filing for one. Sabinsa wasn't an evil corporation. They were simply trying to expand the market use of a compound that they had produced. They're not the fault here. They're being pushed into this position. Resveratrol, same fate. Resveratrol, ingredient in red wine on the dietary supplement market in small amounts, 2 milligrams a dose, because it was so darn expensive to get out of red wine. Now, the resveratrol compounds that come from roots and things are not going to be, they're going to all need NDI applications because they've never existed that way in the human diet before, but here they are from a natural extract. There's already new drug applications for resveratrol. In fact, this sets up a conflict of interest for the FDA because any promising potent new dietary supplement ingredient can readily become a new drug application by any pharmaceutical company that wants to file them, thereby preventing that nutrient from becoming available to the consumer public. This strategy can be applied across the board to dietary supplements that exist now, according to this retroactive FDA ruling that they're trying to sneak past us, and it will apply to all future compounds that show promise. So if we have a truly new NDI, new dietary ingredient, and a supplement company spends $1 million doing safety testing on it, only to find that the FDA is now, as the supplement company gets close to finalizing all of its expensive testing, only to find now that some obscure drug company who spent almost nothing on it can file an investigational drug on the same compound and get approval, thus negating the dietary supplements company's rights. This is cuckoo. But that's exactly what the FDA is doing. And they're doing it specifically to raise the price of supplements to you, to eliminate therapeutic nutritional options from the market, and to take and change all of this over to big pharma, pharmaceutical company control. This is extremely adverse to the health of all Americans, and I would hope that all of you will go to our Take Action page and write the FDA, write your congressional leaders, and let them know exactly what you think about this. This cannot be tolerated. There is a major need for consumers to take action on this. This is not a little issue. This is Rome burning. And unless we as consumer activists take charge, though what you know is the dietary supplement industry will soon not exist. This is a very, very serious issue. And so I will be talking about it maybe every week, I don't know, but certainly most weeks for a while to come, because there are many aspects to this issue that I believe all of us should understand better, and I will take it upon myself as a leading educator in the dietary supplement industry to help all of you understand these issues at a level where we're getting past the soundbite level of understanding, and we're actually understanding what is being done and why, and who's behind this and why. What is this whole attack all about? Because on the surface, it doesn't make a lot of sense to most people. They think, wow, there must be really something wrong with the dietary supplement industry. No, there's really something wrong with the FDA, the pharmaceutical company, and the world healthcare system. Really something wrong with it. All right. As you can see, I get a little bit worked up on this topic. All right, let's go now to your questions for the week. First question comes from Vinny, who says, I would like to know what the cause could be for a male under 30 having benign prostate hypertrophy, BPH. Is it something to worry about? Most natural solutions seem to manage the problem, like salt, palmetto, but is it actually reversible? Well, Vinny, in somebody under 30, the major cause for that problem is a subclinical ongoing fungal or bacterial infection in the prostate. So that is what is generating the inflammation. So that is usually from the history, poor diet, too much alcohol, especially beer, lack of exercise, because the prostate has the poorest circulation of any organ system in the body. So when oxygen isn't getting there from exercise, then germs can thrive. And then if you happen to have extra germs in your digestive tract, then they find their way over to your prostate pretty easily. And so then you can have subclinical problems with fungal and bacterial. You don't even have active infections that you're even aware of. Sometimes you might have some pain on ejaculation or something of that sort, but you really, a lot of times, these symptoms aren't really there. So you're really looking at overall digestive health. You're looking at the quality of your diet. You're looking at reductions or eliminations of alcohol, especially beer. You're looking at overall anti-inflammatory strategies and exercise production. And you're certainly looking at maybe a round of or ongoing use of things like oregano oil and acidophilus to keep these infections at bay. Susan says, a family member was diagnosed with pulmonary fibrosis. Is there some advice you may give? His doctors have given him 5 years. He is 40 with a young family. Whoa, that is a tough problem, Susan, because there are many possible causes for this scarring and tissue buildup in the lungs, which obviously then gets in the way of air exchange and significantly causes issues all over the body, the lungs being a weak spot. So sometimes this is from pollution. Sometimes it's from working in obvious environments, construction environments, where there's a lot of small particles of toxic things that are being inhaled. Sometimes it's from radiation treatments. Sometimes it's from some drugs, including antibiotics. So the causes here can be potentially multiple. But the problem, of course, for this family member of yours is that we now have an ongoing, out-of-control inflammatory process that seems to have a mind of its own. And oftentimes, doctors never do identify what's punching the lungs and the nose, meaning they are trying to do palliative care on the symptoms without even addressing the source, and they just give up looking, which, of course, doesn't help somebody who's 40 years old with 5 years to live and has a young family. And so this is where I don't mind giving you some advice, Susan, because I like to be helpful wherever I can be. Number one, you want to reduce scar tissue formation and try to clear it up. So you do indeed want high levels of nutrients called proteolytic enzymes. And by the way, I'm not giving you a treatment for your family member here. I'm just suggesting nutritional support options. Don't get me wrong. I don't know if I could reverse his problems or not, but I sure would give it a try rather than compared to doing nothing. So anyway, my point is proteolytic enzymes such as bromelain and papain, we use them in our product Repair Plus, which also contains Sabinsa's curcumin. These are able to gobble up and eat up scar tissue in the human body that should not be there. So they may have an ongoing effect working in the opposite direction of the problem, helping to lower the amount of tissue damage. I would then focus on the nutrients that protect the lungs, additionally, such as tocotrienol form of vitamin E, things that help the vascular system and the oxygenation exchange system, such as compounds like resveratrol and grape seed extract that would be found in CardioHelper. And then I would suggest trying to figure out what's and who or what is punching the lungs and the nose. And quite often, you may know from his history, which might determine some of the things I might tell you, but one of the things doctors invariably miss in these situations are the ongoing fungal infections in the respiratory system. They don't even look for them. And so nutrients like oregano oil can be powerfully, powerfully helpful for this sort of a situation in terms of not only reducing the inflammation, but also clearing out subclinical infections that could be driving the process. So there are lots of things you can do, Susan, to help your family member. And those are some tips and ideas on how to get started. All right. Buddy says, what is your outlook on drinking ionized water compared with drinking filtered tap water? Well, buddy, I've been studying water for 20-some-odd years. And I honestly could not tell you if making ionized alkaline water has any real benefit or not in the grand scheme of things. I don't think it is adequate to change homeostatic balance of acid alkaline in and of itself. I don't have any problems with somebody who wants to drink ionized water, somebody who even believes in it. And I certainly don't need your emails telling me I need to be educated about it. I do understand the subject much far better than most people would ever bother with. I mean, I did a lot of research on water. But my point is, I don't have any recommendation for it. I don't have any recommendation against it. I think I don't drink it myself. I drink mostly reverse osmosis water, which of course takes some of the minerals out, and I consume a lot of minerals, so I'm not real concerned about that. I just want to get the toxins out of the water, and I am concerned about that. So I do like filtered water, I'm fortunate in that my home water supplies are from wells, which I like the quality of, so I'm not having city treated tap water. But I would certainly filter whatever water you're getting, always. CL says, hubby and I are 60 plus. We are avid vitamin and mineral users already. My hubby is having terrific leg cramps, especially at night. And plus, in the past, he had a bad right ankle sprain, and now his muscles seem weaker in that leg. He increased his magnesium and potassium intake, and it helped somewhat, but he is still experiencing an ache in the right leg and will apply a muscle rub to help alleviate the ache. Is there anything he should be doing as far as exercising of that leg, or take a different supplement to increase the help? Well, I mean, exercise is, of course, good because you want to keep using something. Because when you start going down into levels where the muscle systems aren't working like they did when you were younger, then the more you don't use them, the more it plays into the problem. On the other hand, you don't want to overuse them, because the way you're describing your husband's problems, he's having trouble getting oxygen to the muscle or retaining oxygen in the muscle. And thus, if he pushes exercise when he's having those cramps, he could actually injure the muscle tissues from the starvation of oxygen, and forcing the muscle to perform when there's no oxygen in it would actually have the net result of damaging the muscle. So this is an example where, yes, you do want to exercise, but you do not want to overdo it, because that will work it into the wrong direction and you will not actually get better. So when we get past the initial things that can be going on with muscle aches, and the basics are magnesium, calcium, potassium. You've already been working on that and gotten some benefits, so that's a good thing. Then we start working on oxygenation issues. So the key nutrients would be nutrients that help deliver oxygen to the legs. And the legs are big muscles, so they tend to show up, as weakness in oxygenating systems tend to show up in the leg muscles anyway. And so I would recommend the tocotrienol form of vitamin E at the dose of 3 a day, and Cardio Helper at the dose of 3 to 6 a day, both of which help to deliver oxygenation and oxygen to the muscles. You also want to make sure that your husband's hemoglobin level is normal and his red blood count is normal, and meaning in the middle of the normal range. Otherwise, and you may even want to try this anyway, the next step besides those oxygenators is to supply iron. Now, iron will help bring, it helps make the hemoglobin that enables oxygen to transport along, so when we use vitamin E, which helps also with the ability of red blood cells to carry hemoglobin, and we use the Cardio Helper, which increases the nitric oxide that is friendly and thus promotes the flow of blood, we are creating a strategy for getting more oxygen to the muscles. But iron also, and I use the product Blood Builder, which has very safe iron bisglycinate in it, but iron is also a key component of something called myoglobin, which is in the muscles, and that's what holds oxygen as a bank account in the muscles so that they can perform activity and not have cramps. So, that's your strategy. All right, Jim says, after a mild heart attack, are there any natural blood thinners that can be used as a safe alternative instead of a prescription drug? Well, yes and no. I mean, first of all, I would not be suggesting nutrients to replace drugs in the context of a medical problem that is potentially of short-term use of a medication. And that's where I Coumadin and some of the other blood thinners, I don't like them as compounds, but medicine has its most value when it is being applied to the correction of a temporary problem that can then be fixed, and then the medications can be stopped. So if you have doctors who say, well, I want you to take you know, Coumadin or Plavix or something of this sort for a defined period of time while the body's healing, and then we're going to get you off of these things. I don't really have a problem with that. I mean, I do and I don't, but I really don't, because it's an appropriate use of medicine to try to help somebody in a particular situation. That said, a lot, and of course, unfortunately, a lot of doctors just think people should then be on these drugs forever. That said, there are many things that thin the blood in natural ways, but don't act the same way. Meaning they're not preventing clotting at a pharmacologic level. They're modulating the stickiness of blood at a natural level so it's less sticky. These would be things like tocotrienol E, Repair Plus with the curcumin and the bromelain, DHA, the fish oil. Those would be my top choices. And they're not exactly the same in terms of physical function as the medications or even aspirin, but they cover the same bases in a way that you would be trying to approach it naturally. Now, so somebody's listening and saying, well, I wonder if that applies to me. Well, here's the thing with not using drugs. It really depends how healthy you are. So, you know, in other words, the way I view drugs, their appropriate use is to prevent a powder keg from blowing. Their appropriate use is to prevent some set of circumstances that are so darned impendingly doomful that you've got to have this toxic protocol to offset the impending doom, and a logical argument can be made for that exact use of drugs. So what I'm saying here is if you're tired, fatigued, out of shape, overweight, eating like a pig, being a couch potato, stressed out, can't sleep, one or all of those, and you're thinking now that you just don't want to take drugs, okay, but you're a time bomb ready to go off. All right, so you get a person who then starts to make changes. You know, they're consistently exercising, they're getting adequate sleep, they clean the crap out of their diet, they're doing much better with eating a clean diet, they're feeling better. Now they have something to work with because they are not in an environment that's prone to excessive clotting risk. The risk of clotting inappropriately that would trigger another heart attack or a stroke or something is directly proportional to the inflammatory status of the person. So if a person is tired, inflamed, worn down, stressed out, etc., they are at risk and have less free play to not use drugs as their quote-unquote safety net so that they don't trigger a problem. On the other hand, individuals who work naturally to bolster their health and can obviously feel that they are more fit and healthier then can rely on nutrients as their safety net with much more confidence that they are not likely to have a problem. Now, I can't guarantee anybody that they will never have a problem by just being healthier and taking nutrients. Nobody can, just as nobody can guarantee any person taking drugs that they are protected from a problem. Nobody can. So this isn't about somebody claiming that somebody can do something for you for sure. This is about you understanding about your own health, taking responsibility for what you do on a day in and day out basis, and then having the best support plan you can understand for your set of circumstances to create you the best odds of having a healthy and happy life with some kind of quality of health into the future, especially if you've had a problem like a mild heart attack. That's very doable, very realistic. All right, but remember, you are responsible. Okay, is there any nutritional product that can be used for the treatment of MRSA in a teenager? I understand this is a very serious disease. Well, if a teenager has active MRSA, they better see a medical doctor because they very well may be in a life-threatening situation and they may have infection that has to be controlled with antibiotics if that's even possible. This is not something, oh, gee, my kid's got MRSA, let's see, what did Byron say to do? Well, I'll give you lots of strategies for boosting your immune system from taking vitamin D to immune support products. There certainly is data showing things like oregano oil can kill MRSA. Does that mean that oregano oil will kill MRSA in your teenager without the guidance of a medical doctor monitoring what's going on? That's nothing I would do if my teenager had MRSA. But yes, sir, sure, I'd use nutrients like oregano oil. In other words, I'd employ my natural toolbox for a problem. But when you have a potentially life-threatening infection active in a teenager, you darn well better see your medical doctors, because this is a reason why they exist that's actually helpful to society. All right. David says, in your recent discussion, I was surprised that you hadn't pointed out, oh, this is my recent discussion about dairy. I was surprised that you hadn't pointed out the advantages of grass-fed, non-antibiotic, and hormone-infused dairy versus the factory farm products. Also, is dairy from goats nutritionally comparable to that from cows? Well, David, I must admit that sometimes when I'm talking about a subject, I don't think of every angle I possibly could, and I don't mention every possible solution for something that I'm talking about. So I just went ahead and read your question as a statement of something I do happen to strongly agree with, and I thank you for pointing it out. The ability of happy cows to be out there grazing in the field, not being fed antibiotics, not being infused hormones, not like the factory farm animals that are pent up, diseased, inflamed, and stimulated with who knows what kind of drug substance to make them swell and be heavier because they're toxic. Yeah, there's a huge difference in quality, and I'm all in favor of those who wish to consume dairy to consume it from the highest possible dairy sources. Now, most of you have probably seen or heard about this raid that went on out in California on the buyer's club that was selling milk, unpasteurized, unprocessed milk. Of course, that club would have made Adele Davis proud. Adele Davis, Adele Davis was one of my early nutrition heroes, for sure. She was always advocating the use of unpasteurized whole dairy products to cure illness. Because once you pasteurize and homogenize dairy products, they lose a lot of, it's not that they lose all of their benefit, but they lose a lot of their healing power. And of course, the public health authorities are paranoid that some bacterial infection will get in that milk and wreak severe havoc, which of course could happen if the dairy animals are not raised properly and cared for properly. And would certainly happen if the factory farms were allowed to produce such kind of garbage. But the friendly farmers who actually care about what they're doing and are quality conscious can easily produce raw milk products that are safe for human consumption. I mean, Adele Davis used to send her clients to her favorite family farms out in California. And they would show up at the doors of the farmers and knock on the doors, and they'd have to give the Adele Davis password, or the farmer wouldn't talk to them. I mean, this battle has been going on for a long, long, long time. But I bring this up because it is the sign of the times that the power of the regulatory authorities, whether it be the FDA, the local health authorities, the state authorities, whomever, are now using police force brutality, including the financial destruction thereof, of companies, American entrepreneurial enterprises, and in this case, a buyer's group that they don't even have the right to regulate, against people that are just common people. They're doing this against small farmers all over the country. They're doing it against dietary supplement companies. I mean, this is insane. Insane. And this is why we've got to stand up here on these take action issues. Yeah, I think dairy from goats is nutritionally comparable to that of cows. There's not as much science on goat dairy as there is on cow dairy, but there does seem to be a lot of overlap of benefit from what I can tell. Of course, I love goat cheese, but I'm not a large consumer of goat-related products other than that from time to time. All right, everyone, that's it this week for the Weekly Wellness Update podcast. If you have a question for me, please email it to me at askbyron@wellnessresources.com. Have a great week, a healthy week, and spread the word. Take care.
The Weekly Wellness Update podcast is produced by Wellness Resources Incorporated. All rights reserved. For more information on the topics and news covered in today's podcast, visit wellnessresources.com. To email Byron a specific health question, send it to askbyron@wellnessresources.com. The information presented in this podcast is for informational purposes. It is not medical advice for the treatment of any condition or illness. You should not use the information in this podcast for diagnosis or treatment of any health problem or to discontinue the use of any medication that has been prescribed to you. Consult your physician or healthcare professional for such needs. Statements made during this podcast regarding any Wellness Resources dietary supplement products have not been evaluated by the FDA. Wellness Resources dietary supplement products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.